So, Peter.
Richard.
Have you ever thought about evacuating the Earth?
Of course not. I have never thought about evacuating the Earth. I haven't got a spaceship. There's nowhere I would go. If you're talking about the Earth meaning land, going underwater, no, I haven't thought of that either. Or going into space, none of it. In fact, none of it. I've not thought about it at all. Sorry, stop grilling me.
Yes, I know. All of a sudden, it's an interrogation.
Yes.
So, the scenario is U.S. President Morgan Freeman.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Deep Impact reference, which I'm sure you don't remember or never saw.
Is it a movie?
It is a movie.
Never saw it.
So in that scenario, of course, there was literally one of these situations where an asteroid was barreling down to Earth. I can't remember if they had 30 days or 3 months or whatever it was. But he had to sort of break the news to the world that now we had to, quote unquote, evacuate the Earth. With that little time, it was a bit of a Noah's Ark scenario where obviously everybody wasn't getting on, you know, good ship, goodbye.
There's probably not enough space to take more than,
I don't know, a few thousand, I think, in this scenario it was. Do you, first of all, do you believe you and I are maybe on that ship, perhaps?
As podcasters?
Well, I mean, they got to have, wherever they're going, they'll need podcasters.
My guess is they take Joe Rogan and Mark Maron and not Peter and Richard.
So you don't think we're necessarily on the Mount Rushmore currently of podcasts?
Nowhere near, and I'm happy to say that.
So we obviously would want to have better skills, more indispensable skills, if we are going to be on that sort of, versus, you know,
we better start working now if we want to get some.
Oh, Final Countdown.
Final Countdown. Well, yes, I know that song. Europe, yes.
But somebody who would probably be on that ship, because they're going to need scientists.
Okay.
And they're going to need communicators who are very good at explaining science. And you know, of course, that means
Bill Nye?
Yes.
The science guy?
No. It's another Bill Nye entirely. We couldn't get Bill Nye the science guy, but we got a guy, he's got some theories.
Yeah.
He's got some ideas, got some strong opinions.
Bill Nye the zebra breeder.
Yes, he's a zebra breeder. No, of course, actually, I'm being facetious. We do have Bill Nye the science guy joining us today to discuss what if we had to evacuate the Earth.
Bill Nye is a scientist, engineer, comedian, author, and inventor. He's also a man with a mission to help foster a scientifically literate society and to help people everywhere understand and appreciate the science that makes our world work. Bill's classic show, Bill Nye the Science Guy, was nominated for 23 Emmys and won 19 of them. And it paved the way for a career in making science accessible, fun, and super cool. And he's still doing exactly that with his sensationally entertaining and informative podcast, Science Rules with Bill Nye.
Bill, thanks so much for joining us. I think it's fair to say for everybody here at What If and our incredible fans in the community that we sort of stand on your shoulders here. What If probably doesn't exist in terms of being out there as something that looks to make science accessible and fun, building on the legacy of what you've been doing for decades now. So just really thrilled to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, you guys. I mean, wow. Sure, you're welcome.
The Mount Rushmore, hopefully, in years to come, will be Bill Nye, maybe Peter. Maybe. We'll see how it goes today. But, I mean, as far as scenarios, and obviously today's What If is, you know, kind of a scary one. It's not one we want to think about, having to evacuate the Earth. Before we sort of get into it, we know that we're monitoring stuff in space all the time. We've never been better at it. But we also know there's surprises and unanticipated things because it's space. What keeps Bill Nye up at night when thinking about this scenario?
Climate change.
Interesting, really?
Yeah. Climate change and asteroid impacts. Very low probability, very high consequence. To put it in PC, personal computer terms, I think it's Control-Alt-Delete for all of civilization. So you wouldn't want that. That would be, that's what we call a bad outcome in the insurance business. So we want to avoid that, and that's why, you know, with the comet that just came through here, it was identified in March with the NEOWISE spacecraft. NEOWISE is the Near Earth Object wide field infrared survey explorer. Yes, so it was looking for asteroids. And, you know, asteroids, as we say, it's like looking for a charcoal briquette in the dark.
Yeah.
But it's, but in the infrared, they do glow. And so they're around 200 Kelvin. If you could find them, then maybe you could identify whether or not they're, you could determine whether or not they're going to cross Earth's orbit when we're there. And then you could do something extraordinary and cool to give them a nudge. Big rocket. Big bomb, a big set of spacecraft that have lasers on them that zzz the asteroid's surface and cause it to ablate, and you get a little momentum and nudge everything out of the way. Yes, be fantastic.
Except in space, there's no sound, so it wouldn't be zzz. It would
just wouldn't sound like that exactly.
A lot of this, Bill, is comes down to time. Say we can't redirect it, and it's headed straight for the Earth. A lot of it is time for us. Like, how much time do we have to prepare to get off the Earth? If we do get it,
when you say get off the Earth, what are you? We're going to go to the International Space Station, or we're going to go to some space station that is yet to be built.
So
somebody would have to be building it right now.
Is that what's going to have to happen? We would have had to have already started building this.
Well, kids, people, colleagues,
I appreciate that.
Deflecting an asteroid, everybody wants 20 years, but let's call it 30 years notice. 30 years notice. That's a lot, but it's not that much. You know, if you're in high school right now, by the time you're a captain of industry, you'll be driving the ship and giving the asteroid a nudge. But these extraordinary and amazing ideas of building enormous space stations on the scale of geosynchronous orbits, you know, things 36,000 kilometers above the Earth's surface, or 34,000 above the surface, whatever. These are just lovely, fun physics problems. You know, can I say V squared over R or whatever, the velocity squared divided by the radius, nothing but fun. But who's going to pay for this thing? Who's going to build this giant thing? And it would, at some point, you know, block some of the sunlight that hits the Earth. And so, and I don't mean to be dismissive. They're wonderful, cool physics problems. But economically, they're very unlikely. Don't you think?
Well, I mean, to your point earlier about climate change, too, if we can't sort of come together on that, that the sort of the mobilization required to do something like this just seems almost silly to even consider, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes. But it is, they're just cool problems. Now, the reason this whole thing happened, can I try something? You know, we had a little technical issue earlier today, everybody. But let's go up here. Let's all go up here onto the old thing. And then look over there. Can you see right there? Mm-hmm. That's a poster of Buzz Aldrin walking on the moon.
Wow.
Okay. And what we love about that, if you get up close to it, it says Aldrin's visor reflects Armstrong. That's all it says. The caption, Aldrin's visor reflects Armstrong. It doesn't say, and they were on the moon. And the reason they were on the moon is the US committed about the cost of 3 interstate highway systems to put them there. So if you're just evaluating things, which is more valuable, the interstate highway system or 6 people walking on the moon, or 12 people walking on the moon, 6 missions, you'd probably say the interstate highway system, probably. And the reason that happened was because of the Cold War, because the former Soviet Union was perceived as this terrible threat. And through a remarkable political circumstance, a president declared we're going to go to the moon, and then he was catastrophically killed. And so then his legacy just took on this life of its own. And people went to the moon, walked around, brought back some moon rocks, which have been great and continue to be of great scientific value. But if you just wanted moon rocks to determine the age of the Earth, which has been the wonderful scientific outcome of that, of the moon rocks, you could do it much more cheaply, you know, robotically. In fact, the former Soviet Union sent a rover there and brought back a few kilos robotically, but it doesn't have the same romance. And so when we talk about these Stanford Tauruses,
Tauri. I have no idea.
See, here's the thing, you know, along with my many other difficulties, I took 3 years of Latin.
Oh, wow.
So you get, I'm fine. You get into this thing of how do you pronounce this? Is it alumni, alumni, alumnae, tori, tori?
Monkeys, monkai.
It's so stressful to even think about it. No, I'm all right.
Do you see, like, people have talked about living on the moon, settlements on the moon, going to Mars, living on Mars. Is that also within the realm of not worth considering right now to your, like?
Oh, no, no, no.
Or do you see that as more likely?
Here's the thing. If I were king of the footies, I would want to go to Mars, but I want to come back. Mars is smaller than the Earth. It cooled off faster than the Earth. It got an ocean and an atmosphere perhaps a billion years before the Earth did. So it is reasonable that if life is going to start someplace where there's water, it started on Mars. And it is extraordinary, but not crazy or irrational to suggest that life started on Mars. Mars was hit with an impactor, and then woo, except it's in space, as I like to joke, it's just a rock came to Earth, and you and I are descendants of some Martian life form. That is extraordinary. And that is a hypothesis worth investigating, especially at the very low cost of interplanetary missions compared to all the other crazy things we do.
Yeah, and so, I mean, everything's on the table now these days, but so, to your point,
anyway,
yeah.
The Perseverance rover is on its way there with some astrobiology experiments on board to investigate this hypothesis. I mean, it's really, it's just a wild time. It's wild.
Where can they go to follow you, or what kind of cool things have you got coming up?
Well, everybody, your homepage, I'm sure, is BillNye.com. But while you're there, go to the podcast homepage, AskBillNye.com, and send us your question. The podcast is called Science Rules. We do two versions. Is it okay to pitch a podcast on a podcast?
Yes, yeah. In fact, it actually makes
tons
of sense.
The regular, about hour-long version, and then the much shorter coronavirus edition, which we do every 2 weeks. We've had Tony Fauci on, we've had Bruce Brilliant, we've had Celine Gounder, people that you see on the TV. We've had them on the show. We had Arnie Duncan, who in the US was very known, a guy, well-known guy, who's head of the Department of Education, talking about opening schools during coronavirus pandemic. And so these people are very thoughtful, and they, I encourage you to check us out. Science Rules at Stitcher Midroll.
So we're going to actually say bye to Bill for now.
Wow. So Bill Nye, a guy who knows a lot, also a guy who probably never stops learning.
Doesn't sound like it, does it?
No. And I think you're a guy who likes to never stop learning. Am I right?
Not to the same level of absorption, let's say, as a guy like Bill Nye, the science guy. But yes, I love to learn. I love to continue to learn, just like we do every week on this show.
Well, now is the time to continue your studies or your learning, because, you know, with COVID-19, we're all at home. We got... Most of us have a little bit of extra time to learn. Well, why don't you become more informed, creative, inspired, relaxed, all with the Great Courses Plus. We're really big fans of this, aren't we, Richard?
Well, so I was at home the other day, and this sounds made up, but it isn't. I'm setting up my smart TV because I just moved, so I'm going through the apps available on my smart TV. There's our old friend, greatcoursesplus.com. I'm thinking maybe I could jump in and get prepared for the Bill Nye episode. Woo, moon rocks. There's a whole episode on moon rocks from the Apollo mission. This Professor Bob Hazen is talking about this, in his words, the scientific bonanza that created 50 years ago when they just came home with a few rocks from the moon. You'd think, well, that's kind of, what, is it a paperweight? No, they've been actually gleaning tons of scientific info. And then all of a sudden we're talking to Bill Nye earlier, and he's talking about moon rocks and how they've actually helped us understand what the age of our planet, continents here, minerals and elements in the earth. Like, it's incredible the amount of knowledge we've been able to glean from moon rocks, and incredible the amount of knowledge I was able to glean from a greatcoursesplus.com episode that I was getting ready for this show.
Well, let me tell you, the Great Courses Plus has not only that, but thousands of lectures on almost any topic imaginable, from the history of Egypt to the study of DNA, and new courses are added all the time. There's someone for everyone, not just moon rock lovers like yourself. Plus, every course is presented, like you say, by subject matter experts from top universities and institutions. It's in-depth, reliable, fact-based information. And you can watch or listen from your phone or your TV with the Great Courses Plus app at any time from anywhere in the world. So make the most of your time. Keep learning with the Great Courses Plus. Right now they're offering fans of this show an amazing deal, an entire month of access for free. This limited time offer won't last, so sign up today to get started. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/whatif. Don't wait. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/whatif.
I think you meant to say thegreatcoursesplus.com/whatif.
That's, I think, exactly what I said. So let's go there and get your free month. Welcome back to What If Discussed. Bill Nye joins us, and we're talking about evacuating Earth. Now, Bill, am I crazy or...
Well, you could stop right there.
Yes.
To think...
I have some ideas.
The only way that we could possibly get off this Earth is if we were already building something to get us off, everybody, and if all the nations came together at once and pooled all their money and resources.
Well, when you say getting off the Earth, how many people are you talking about? You know, the 10,000?
Well, definitely the most important ones, like yourself, myself, and Richard. So
I would like
three.
To believe we'd be part of this Noah's Ark.
I'm hoping. I'm really hoping.
You know, there are 7.6, 7.7 billion people. And getting 10,000 off the Earth is good, but I don't think it's what... It's not a solution that everybody's crazy about.
No, so we're not all going to live. It's just getting select people off to propagate the...
Well, listening to the proposal, yeah, that's what it sounds like, yes.
Where are you on exoplanets? And I don't mean literally.
Oh, I love them.
But I mean, I'm guessing, A, the James Webb telescope coming out in a few years. I can't even imagine what we're going to end up seeing. Do you anticipate that we're going to one day find, let's say, quote unquote, better options for this type of scenario that are beyond our ability to see right now?
What do you mean a better option?
Well, let's say, for example, one of these super Earths or something that would be more like Earth, but just not necessarily in this galaxy. Because we always look to Mars, we look at Venus, you know, we talk about the moon, but are we going
to
potentially, yes, to send a... You know, to potentially not colonize necessarily, but to potentially seed another planet? Is that something that could be a scenario in hundreds of years, perhaps?
Well, right now, no, because everybody, you know, I'm of a certain age, and who's my hero? Lieutenant Montgomery Scott on Star Trek, who pointed out from time to time, I can't change the laws of physics. And so unless some extraordinary thing happens, there's no way, no practical way to get to another star system in anybody's lifetime, because the distances are measured in light years, which is the distance light goes in a year. A light year is a measurement of distance. And so it's just very, very unlikely. But with that said, how cool will it be to find evidence of life on another world? And you would do that by looking at the atmospheres of these other worlds with telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope, the instruments on board that telescope. Or you, in the ultimate amazing thing, you would find evidence of radio or style communication that we have here on Earth, so-called techno signature. Maybe you'll find evidence of carbon burning in their atmosphere like we have here on Earth, fossil fuel burning. And this would be just amazing. And that's done by getting a planet between us and the star and looking at it very closely in that thin, thin film that is the atmosphere of that planet. So you guys, when I was in school, Frank Drake produced the famous Drake equation. where you, it's very, for, I bet a lot of your listeners are very familiar. They maybe have thought about it a lot more than I have, but the idea is a string of fudge factors. So you take the number of stars, then you say, well, how many of those stars have planets? Then how many of those planets are in the habitable zone, or where there's liquid water just to the right distance from a star to have liquid?
The old Goldilocks zone.
Then how many of those, how old are those, and how, what are the likelihood of life, and blah, blah, blah. You keep multiplying it by all these fractions that are less than one, and you get a fraction of 200 billion, 200 billion stars in the galaxy. All right, when I was in college, it was estimated or presumed maybe there's a planet around one in every 100 stars. Well, nowadays, people using all these telescopes like Hubble, especially Hubble Space Telescope, people have decided there's probably about 10 planets around every star, not one planet around one in 100, 10 around every one of them. So just in my lifetime, the estimates of the likelihood of an Earth-like planet have gone up 1,000-fold. And the more we learn about it, it seems to me, my perception as a guy who's involved in space exploration a little bit, is the more we learn, the more likely the whole thing becomes. And the whole thing, I mean life.
I mean, if you're a betting man at this point, I would assume, because to your point, it's mathematically, almost mathematically impossible or implausible that there wouldn't be intelligent life out there somewhere. Have you arrived at that and feel comfortable saying more than likely that's the case?
Oh, there's got to be. How could there not be? There's 200 billion stars in our galaxy alone, and there are at least that many galaxies. So come on, there's got to be somebody else out there. And there are these two questions that we all wonder about. And if you meet people who say, I've never wondered about those two things, they're lying to your face. And the two questions are, where did we all come from? Mm. Where did we come from? My goodness, where did we come from? Or put another way, how did we get here? Mm-hmm. And then the other question is, are we alone? Are we alone in the cosmos? Which these are just profound, amazingly deep questions that can only be answered by exploring space. So
I you mentioned school and university earlier, and I know that, I believe at Cornell University, you might have had a class with one Carl Sagan.
So I took one class from this famous astronomer. I was a senior. I had completed my mechanical engineering requirements, or enough of them. I took a class as an elective, astronomy 102, and it changed my life. And now I'm the head of the planetary society that he started a couple years after I was graduated. So it's, what in the world? It's just the whole thing. What in the worlds? The whole thing is just amazing. It's amazing stuff that happens to you.
Do you ever have any chats with him about, I mean, obviously these are, you know, those deep probing questions that you talk about. I mean, these are the things that he made famous with, you know, with Cosmos and everything else. But this, you know, obviously the script for Contact and everything else. Did you ever have one of those just sort of after class chats about kind of what's out there?
Well, I went, the answer is sort of. I went through a friend of mine, John Olson, another guy I went to college with. He said, Bill, we got to come to this. So we went to a symposium in at Cornell. There's a, really is a building called the Space Sciences Building. And we went to the symposium, and there's Kip Thorne. You know who I'm talking about?
Kip Thorne was the consultant on Interstellar, if I remember correctly, and a Nobel laureate.
That was
as well.
Something else he did, but he's a big theorist about what happens to the energy of black holes. Where does it all go? What happens when things fall into a black hole? What is a black hole? It's a star, and so on. Anyway, so there's Kip Thorne and Carl Sagan and Hans Bethe. Hans Bethe is the guy who discovered discovered the CNO cycle in red stars. This is the cycle where you get 6 protons, 7 protons, 8 protons, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, that leads to all the stuff on the periodic table. Mm. Everything that you and I are made of is a result of fusion in stars that then go on to explode and Although apparently there was some lithium around after the Big Bang. But all that aside, these three guys are sitting there talking about black holes. And, you know, we all asked, you know, not silly, but not eye-rolling, but almost eye-rolling questions. Here's the question. What happens to the stuff that falls into a black hole? Does the black hole keep growing? Or is there some cosmic balance that's maintained where, you know, this business of the wormhole, where the energy ends up in another part of the cosmos at another time?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, like that's normal. Like that's something you can ponder.
Yeah.
And then keep in mind, in those days, people didn't have any idea. No one had talked about dark matter and dark energy. But now it's generally agreed, and you'll get a different second digit on this, but 94, 95, 96% of the universe is unknown. Mm. The matter in the universe is invisible to us, or nominally invisible to us, and we call it dark matter. And it's pushed around with dark energy, and nobody knows what that is, really. It's like a hand waving. Oh, it's your dark matter is what it is there. Yeah, that's what's causing that motion of those galaxies.
Is the at the micro level, is the analogy not the same for the atom?
What do you mean? Like we don't know?
Like that the atom's kind of 99% empty with the exception of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, people talk about that. That's great. That's really good. You're right. People talk about that all the time. Is that the natural order of things? With a nucleus, all this empty space, some electrons, a star, some planets, all this empty space, another star, bunch of stars, galaxy, all this empty space, another galaxy with another bunch of stars and another few planets, it's presumed. No, people talk, is that the way the universe is? And does dark matter somehow play into that? Are there particles of dark? Are there darkons? Mm. One of my own coinages, by the way. Anyway, dark matter, is generally agreed, provides gravity, which accounts for the motion of all these objects. And where that comes from and how it influences things is unknown. But I like to give you this perspective, if you got time. Mm-hmm. My grandparents, when they were born and became of age, had no idea, had no understanding, had no interest, had no reason to cross paths with relativity. Relativity was discovered in their lifetimes. They lived for the application of relativity to make nuclear weapons and then nuclear power. Who knows in 30 years from now if somebody will have some application of dark energy and dark matter? Will some, you know, your phone, your mobile phone, relies on both special relativity. The speed of the clocks in spacecraft as they move relative to the Earth's surface, and general relativity, the speed of clocks in spacecraft as affected by the Earth's gravity. I mean, dude, that is like so out there that in my parents' time, there was no understanding, no application of this stuff. You guys, I'm of an age. I remember when lasers were discovered or coherent light was discovered. And this is where all the waves are moving together. It's like, just think what the future holds in the discoveries in science, let alone the stuff that's going on in genetics and CRISPR, you know, the clustered, repeating inner space, small palindromic repeats,
wow.
CRISPR. Yeah, so just think what that's going to do to crops, you know, human nutrition and the human health, you know, where you could eliminate in genetic diseases and stuff, hypothetically.
Well, Bill, that sounds like we're going down a laneway for another what if. We want to wrap up your time here today, but we're going to have you join us on a future episode. But thanks so much for joining us here today on What If Discussed.
Thank you, guys. Be safe out there.
Science rules, Bill Nye. quick summary from Bill Nye.
The summary was basically...
It's not happening.
It's not happening.
It's too expensive.
Yeah.
Mars is unlikely. Certainly even mobilizing people around doing something like this. And in the end, really, his I don't know, his overall message is kind of what? Like,
keep an eye on the planet and keep care of what you have right now. I mean, which is what we should have all been thinking in the first place. I don't know why we really think that, oh yeah, we're just going to leave the Earth and we're going to go find some Goldilocks planet to live on.
Yeah.
It's not easy, as he says. It's going to take all the resources of all the governments in the world, or all the money, and we're not going to get 7.7 billion people off the planet. So how about we just stop polluting and stop chopping down all the trees? And
yeah, if we thought that was a reasonable plan B after talking to Bill Nye, not so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you asked him as well, in the end, this is all about time. What scenario would we ever have where we really had enough of a lead up to get anybody really off this planet in any real way?
30 years.
Yeah, and 30 years, I mean, come on,
we can't even get it together to
build a new bridge in 3 years, yeah, or whatever it is, yeah, and certainly focus on things like climate change. So again, not that he was being pessimistic, but he was being really realistic in that, look, guys, that's not really an option, so you better just focus on what you have here at home and devote whatever energy, time, and even hypotheticals to how can we solve this problem here before we start thinking about maybe evacuating the Earth.
That's right.
Yeah, and more than just how many people can get off the planet, we went on for, I don't know, a long time going in all sorts of cool, super wild directions about basically the cosmos, life on other planets. I mean, this is not something, to be honest, you want to miss.
No, you never want to miss anything that Bill Nye says because it's informative and it's funny.
Well, or if it was just you and I, you wouldn't want to miss it either. But yes,
right,
Bill brings an extra layer of professionalism, credibility, authority, and entertainment that we might not
have. I was going to say he's the third dimension to our chat, but he's really the fourth dimension.
That's how I like to think of it. So tons to unpack there. Obviously, we sort of veered away from what if we had to evacuate the Earth, and we sort of just got right into it, didn't we?
He really does like to veer,
yeah,
which is great because we get so much more packed into an episode. It's all for you, the listeners at home.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, like, that's one of those ones where you do sit back and go, you know, let me get my notes here, because we're talking about everything from exoplanets to the Drake equation to a very good point. There was a time not too long ago where we thought there was basically a few stars with, you know, one in every 100 stars had a planet around it. And now you're changing the game to every star has 10 planets, and you're multiplying the amount of stars and galaxies.
It makes more sense. I mean, most stars are probably larger than our sun, and for our sun to have 10 planets around it, why wouldn't every other star have at least that many?
Well, and then, breaking news, folks, although I'm sure you said it before, and I'm sure it's not as big of a surprise, if we were doing the show 10 years ago, 20 years ago, Bill Nye, the science guy, coming on and saying, I believe there's intelligent life in this universe, that it's essentially mathematically impossible that there isn't, would be a big story. But today it isn't, right? Like, most of us are like, eh.
Yeah, most of us are. But there are still people out there who do not believe in, and when you bring up intelligent life, people are thinking about aliens and the Great Gazoo, like in a previous episode that we've already talked about. But intelligent life doesn't necessarily have to be aliens and spaceships.
No, and or look like Peter or Richard. I mean, who knows what that's going to ultimately mean?
Yeah, hopefully they don't look like Richard.
Well, I appreciate that. And remember, the truth is out there.
The truth is out there. Thanks again to the always amazing Bill Nye for joining us on today's What If Discussed. If you want more What If, well, sign up for the What If Explorers Club newsletter for tons of cool science stuff and to find out what Richard and I are doing here behind the scenes at What If. To sign up, go to whatifshow.com. That's it for today. We'll see you next time on What If Discussed.